Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello and welcome to the Sheer Lux in Conversation podcast with me, Charlotte Collins. This week, I'm joined by content creator, influencer and TikTok star, Christina Najjar, aka Tinks. What started as a hobby at the beginning of the pandemic has since catapulted Tinks to internet stardom, amassing 1.5 million TikTok followers, 350,000 Instagram followers and an entire subculture where her devotees hang on her every word, buy everything she recommends and rail her for advice in her twice weekly Ask Me Anything segments. From Gwyneth Paltrow to Lauren Santo Domingo, she counts some of the world's most glamorous women among her loyal fans, with the former even guest starring in a Rich Mom video, something of a Tinks signature, in which she parodies wealthy women and their lifestyles. Part comedian, part guidance counselor, Vogue has dubbed her as TikTok's big sister, and today she's here with me to talk internet stardom, the highs and lows of social media, and the advice she gives to all young girls. So hi, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Do people call you Tinks?
Everyone calls me Tinks.
Do they?
So yeah.
We should say from the offset that we went to school together.
Yeah, we went to school together.
So I know you as Christina.
I feel like at school it was split what people called me, and now it's like everybody calls me Tinks.
Okay, we'll go with Tinks.
We'll go with Tinks, yeah.
Can you give us a bit of background about where you started, how you went to school in England, how you've now become an internet sensation? What's the journey been?
Yes, so my parents moved to London when I was less than one, and they thought, like so many Americans, oh, we'll go for, you know, a year, we love it so much, we have a new baby, and they never left. They're still here 31 years later. So I grew up here to American parents, which is why my accent is mid-Atlantic is at best and plain old confusing at worst.
You can do a pretty good London accent.
I can do, and the most embarrassing thing is, and now I've kind of like, people on TikTok had so many questions about it that I kind of reached my breaking point, and I made a video and I was like, guys, I know it doesn't make sense. So now I feel less ashamed to just say all of the weird intricacies. Like if I'm in a cab by myself, I'll use a British accent. Or if I'm ordering in a restaurant here, I'll use a British accent.
Is like, that conscious?
No, it's just like I can't do a British accent to a British person in private, like if they don't know me from before, which is super confusing, but I've been told by multiple psychiatrists that it's totally normal.
So an identity thing.
It's an identity thing, yeah. So I grew up here. I went to a British school with you. So all girls school my whole young life and loved it. And but I always wanted to go to school in the US for college. And I joke that it's because I watched like too much The OC in high school or whatever. But I think it was more just that I wanted to experience that part of my identity, my parents being American, and I had this like strong pull to California. So I went to Stanford and then graduated. And I always thought I went to Stanford for English, literature and creative writing. And then I was like, maybe I want to be in fashion or, you know, something to do with that. So I worked at Gap Inc. And that was really interesting. Then I worked at this company called Poshmark, which is like, it's kind of like Depop. Then I went back to school for a master's in journalism in New York at Parsons School of Design, because I still thought that there was something about fashion. But this whole time, since I graduated college, I had been freelance writing, and that's where I was really happiest, as I would be writing, like, I would be lying if I said I didn't want to be Andy Anderson, how-to girl. Like, all my articles were like, this is like why dating is like Pokemon Go, or like, this is how Game of Thrones is like Tinder, and all those kind
of
like, all
the hard-hitting stuff.
Yeah. And that's where I was just so happy. And so I was like, oh, maybe I'll go to New York, be a writer, whatever. Hated grad school, was just not for me. So when I graduated, I was like, I need to get back to California. moved to LA, had a, this like vision that I should move there. But I was kind of like doing odd jobs, honestly. Like I was consulting, I was freelance writing. Anybody who's been a freelance writer knows it's very unsteady work. So I was like helping other brands with their social media, doing this and that, and was kind of starting to make a life for myself in LA. Also, anybody who knows like moving cities in your 20s, like it's a massive upheaval. And I always tell girls, like it takes a year. Like if you move and you're scared shitless and you're like, I don't know what I'm doing, I can't make any friends, like it's okay, because it takes ages to get your bearings. And then the pandemic hit, and obviously nobody wanted articles about like how to match your zodiac sign to your workout gear or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was like on the phone with my parents being like, I think I have to move home. This is like really dismal situation. And then I was like, you know what? I might as well just make a TikTok. I'm so bored. I was in the tiniest flat, studio flat. It was the darkest, weirdest flat I've ever seen in my life. I mean, not really, but it was so depressing. And I was alone. Like my family was in England. Mm-hmm. So I was literally like super, super alone, like talking to the walls, kind of going batshit. And then as soon as I made my first TikTok video, I was like, oh, this is what I've been supposed to be doing all my life. And it was truly that instant.
And you didn't have any kind of following before, right? Presumably you were at zero.
No, I was at zero followers. Yeah.
So what happened? Like, how did it grow?
So I think it was two things. So I think first of all, I was just like, oh, this is what it feels like to be fulfilled by doing something. Like this feels, it's that crazy feeling of like, oh my God, I can't wait to do this in the morning, even if no one sees it, right? And I think that as we grow up, that's a feeling that's very hard to find, because as we become adults, it's always like, why am I doing this? Like, is this for money? Is this for, you know, to look cool? Is this for this or that? It's like we lose that childhood instinct of like, I'm just doing this to create. And that's what was, I felt sparked in me again. So I was like, wow, I need to hold on to this and like pull this thread. And then also it started to resonate with people right away. And I'm so happy that it did and that it continues to. But I was like, I'm going to do this every day and just see what happens.
A lot of people, I think, still don't really get TikTok. Still don't know what it is. Yeah. It's definitely like a certain age demographic. 100%. You know, you always say you're the oldest person on TikTok.
I am.
You're 21. You're really not that old.
Yeah.
But for those who are listening who still aren't really sure what it is, like, can you just break it down a bit?
Yeah. So it's a video entertainment app, I would call it. And the videos, there is literally a video for every type of humor, for every type of educational purpose. And basically the more time you spend on it, which is the loophole, the better the algorithm gets. So for example, if you go on and you're like, I love dogs and you like all the funny dog videos, then your feed will populate with videos that they know that you'll like. And it's a great mix. So it's like, I'm saying dog, but that's actually too broad. It's like, say if you have like a homemade candle making hobby, like they'll find that, they'll figure it out, and they will feed you those videos to the point where it is the most personalized entertainment I think on the planet.
Really?
And it is so entertaining and it's so funny and cool. And I mean, I absolutely love it. Not only because it gave me my start, but it's genuinely like what I do at the end of the day to relax. And I still watch the videos there.
I mean, it's so addicting.
It's so addicting. Yeah. And because it's getting smarter. Every second you spend on it, it's getting smarter, which is, you know, obviously done interesting things to my attention span, given the videos are a maximum of 3 minutes, but very smart app.
And I mean, people kind of write it off as something for young people, but like, and you know, we joke obviously about you being older, but like, it's not, right? Like, there's content for everything.
There's content for everything. And there's so many, like, I always joke that I learned so much on TikTok, like recipes, home improvement, that kind of stuff. And also, I mean, that was part of why I started, is like, I thought, oh, I'm enjoying this so much. I don't see a ton of people, like, this was, because I started April of the pandemic, so 2020. I didn't see like a ton of millennial content. I didn't see a ton of like our kind of humor. Like millennials love a starter pack. We love a little bit of satire of coastal elites, that kind of thing. And I was like, well, I can add to this and grow audience here and kind of deliver for my people.
So talk to me a bit about that, because obviously you had the writing thing, but like, you're not a comedian by trade, right?
No.
And you never kind of, as far as I know, never wanted to do stand up, right?
No.
So like, where did that come from? This kind of, did you always, well, I mean, I know you always have that kind of satirical thing in you, but like, how did you tap into that?
So I think it's like, I always tell the girls, and by the way, when I say the girls, I mean my followers, like sometimes you're doing things and you don't know what it's leading towards, or you don't know why you're doing something, but you're always learning, actually, you are. So I think writing was a precursor to TikTok in a lot of ways, because in a way, like, an article and a TikTok are not dissimilar. You have a certain amount of time and a certain amount of people's attention span to entertain people, educate them, break up their workday, whatever. And I kind of think about them the same way, right? Like, I'm not going to write an article that doesn't provide value in some way. And that's the same way with TikTok. It's like, okay, I have 3 minutes to, like, make people laugh or do whatever. So I think, in a way, that I just never thought of myself as an in front of the camera person. But in large part, it's also the pandemic, where, I mean, I feel like we were kind of coming to the end of that era of influencers anyway, of, like, the picture perfect one. But I think especially with COVID and lockdown, everybody was kind of like, wow, we just don't care about perfection anymore in the way that we used to. And I think that really encouraged me. And if you look at my early videos, I was always hungover because I was drinking, like, a bottle of wine alone and in lockdown. I was always wearing hoodies, no makeup. Like, the way that I actually got my following was just being, like, completely raw in myself, to the point where now if I wear makeup, they're like, whoa, Tinks, like, you look so fancy. I'm like, I just have mascara on. It's not a big deal.
So you obviously started with the kind of the satire stuff. And mm-hmm. So you were kind of doing the self-deprecating thing. How did that evolve into kind of what it is now? Like, for those who don't follow you now, I mean, it's everything, right? Like, you've still got the satire, yeah, but then you've got, you know, you do your mini vlogs, which is so great. Like, there's such a wealth of content. So, like, where did all of that come from?
I think a lot about one tip that I always give new creators is, like, create the content that you want to see. And I found that a lot of, when I follow, like, influencers or content creators, I would want to see more. I just wouldn't want to see one thing. And I think that that's such a trap that influencers and content creators can fall into, because it's like, you want to be consistent, right? So I think about my content as, like, a little mini variety show. And I, you know, when someone follows me, I think about it, like, as though they're making an investment in me, and I need to deliver. I need to add value to their day. Because I hate it when I follow someone and they, like, clog up my feed with boring or, you know, redundant. I'm just like, my filter is, how can I entertain? How can I educate? How can I inform? How can I empower? Like, it has to be doing one of those things. Otherwise, why am I putting it up? You know,
it's value added.
Mm-hmm. And also, I think that people, you know, kind of to what I was saying before, people want more of a full picture of an influencer's life or a content creator's life. They don't just want one thing. Whereas before, it was very like, these are my beauty influencers, these are my fashion influencers, these are my lifestyle. Like, I truly, you don't know what you're going to get. Like, am I hungover? Am I posting drunk from somewhere? Or am I saying something really serious about feminism? Like, you really, it's kind of a wild card.
Support luck.
So I'm like, I'm consistent in my inconsistency. And that's by design, because I want to make sure that it's exciting and fun to follow me. And it's not just one note.
The same thing.
Yeah.
And where did the advice stuff come from? So obviously you do these, this is on Instagram as well, but, you know, there's so much of this on TikTok from you as well. You explain it better than me.
I have always loved getting advice. Like, when I trust someone, I love asking them for advice, really listening to it. I also love reading female memoirs. I learn so much from them. My whole ethos is basically, like, if you have a room full of women and someone has a problem, someone in there has the answer. It's just about sharing the information. And I don't know everything, by no means, but I do know a little bit more than some girls in some areas. And it's like, if I can make a mistake and I can save some girl out there 3 weeks by explaining, like, what happened to me with some boy, that's like, means the world to me. Like, mm-hmm. that is what life is about. So it just sort of started, people started asking me, and it had so much traction immediately. And I would do these Ask Me Anythings, and a majority of the questions were, you know, about life and dating and how to be in your 20s. And there was a lot about, you know, I'm afraid to get older, I'm afraid to be single, or I'm comparing myself a lot. And it just really, you know, I think it just felt so natural. And also, I don't know if it was the all-girls school thing too, because I went to an all-girls school until I was 18. And then at Stanford, I was president of my sorority. Like, I love my girlfriends. I love female friendship. I think it's the thing that boosts you up. I think that dating, men, marriage, it's fantastic and wonderful and fulfilling. But your female friendships are, I mean, that's so special. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, again, it's just about sharing the information.
What's the topic you get asked about the most?
Dating. Hands down. And I think that, you know, people are lost. Like, it is a whole new era. And just to say, you know, just to kind of roll your eyes when people say, oh, it's so much more difficult with social media and dating apps. Like, that's, it is. Mm. Like, I hate when women are gaslit and into thinking like, oh, we're making a fuss out of nothing. Like, no, it's so complicated. It's not just like, oh, did he call me or not? It's, did he watch my fucking Instagram mm-hmm. story? Did he like my post? Who is he following? Was he like online on WhatsApp? Like, there are so many different channels to manage and to like adjust your expectations to and navigate that I think people are just lost. And it's like, we can, rather than having a scarcity mindset, meaning like elbows out, like, ooh, there's only one boy, there's only one job. It's like, let's share the information mm-hmm. and like make it easier for all of us.
That's a very like, I mean, mature sounds really patronizing, but you know, it takes a lot of people a long time to get to that place yeah. of, you know, wanting to kind of be a sister in that way and share that information. Like, was it a process for you to get to that point?
I was always obsessed with girls. No, I always wanted a sister. Mm. I have a little brother who I adore. I adore him so much. He's my best friend, but I just always loved, I trust women. Like, I trust the good in them and I feel like we can help each other so much. And I remember both at school and in my sorority, like, I would look up to the older girls and, you know, if they took the time, let me put it this way. I remember the girls who would stop and say, oh no, you should do this class instead. Or like, oh, like that guy's being a jerk because of this. Or, you know, that sticks in my memory like crazy. And then also, you know, memoirs that I've read that have had some of the biggest impact on me in my life. Like, and if I can do that for someone else, it's just like, it's the best feeling in the world.
Whose memoirs have stuck with you?
Diane von Furstenberg's is amazing. Yes. It's so good. You can learn
the woman I wanted to be.
Yes, it's literally incredible. God, who else have I run? Gabrielle Union.
I feel like sorry, hers is kind of helpful that she's a princess. Eh? That is sort of the foundation.
It's a huge help. It turns out huge help if yeah. you can who manage knew? To be a princess and have a really glamorous life. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Gabrielle Union, Demi Moore, all of Nora Ephron's work is obviously amazing. But it's just, if you can internalize some of the you know, mantras that they say, it really does. It's helped me. So it's, again, it's an honor that my followers trust me.
What's the difference between Instagram and TikTok for you mm-hmm. and the different types of content you create and how, and the reception you get and how you manage those followers differently?
They are so different. It's so interesting. TikTok is way more immediate, as in if you're not hooking people in the first 3 seconds of the video, they're going to scroll. That's just the nature of the app, and that's good and bad. For TikTok, I'm just thinking about how can I grab their attention? How can I sum up my idea into 1 minute or less? Instagram, I always call them like my A-team because it's the people who really like to know everything about my life. And I feel a lot closer to them, honestly, because of Instagram stories. And I think because Instagram stories, I don't think. I'm like, oh, I'm having this like really good cake. I want to show them right now. Like, I would never make a TikTok about a slice of cake. Well, that's a lie. That was a bad example because I love cake. But, you know, Instagram stories, it's like that's the minutiae of my day.
And it's spontaneous.
Totally. And so they're different, but it's a lot to manage. And it's so funny because I always worry that I'm being repetitive and people will start following me and they'll be like, wait, can you explain this thing and that thing? And I'm like, oh, I don't want to repeat because that's going to annoy my followers who have been here for a while. But it's like nobody sees all your content. Mm. That's the crazy thing is I make quite a bit of content. Like I make 3 TikToks a day, about 2 to 5 minutes of Instagram stories and 1 grid post a day. Mm-hmm. And people don't see all my content. Yeah. Like, and it's like they can be following me on all platforms. It's a vain narcissism, honestly, that I think everybody's like.
You're running a business. So you've got to yeah. assume that people are seeing it all.
Yeah.
What does an average day look like for you? I know you'll laugh and say there isn't one. But, you know, what does life look like at the moment?
No, so I'm really into routine. I love it. I think routine, that's so funny because I love reading things of people being like, what's your routine? And people are always like, I know 2 days the same. And I'm like, I rise at 6 p.m. No, but I get up at 6 a.m. every morning and I dry brush. I don't know how much detail you want, but I'm going to give it to you anyway.
Hit me.
I put on a song and then I dry brush for 2 minutes. People are always like, Tinks, what does dry brushing do? Listen, I don't really know, but it feels good.
Sure.
And a lot of famous people do it, so I'm going to do it too.
It
can't hurt. Mm. It's a nice way to start the day. And I try to, and then I always go on my walk.
So it's got a name.
It's called the Rich Mom Walk, RMW. And I think that walking has been slept on for a while. Like, people think walking is not cool. walking is the best exercise. It's the best meditation. It's the best therapy. No matter where I am in the world, I always get up and go for a walk. It can be 5 minutes. Listen, we need fresh air. We're all busy gals. We all are working our asses off. And sometimes we forget, like, yes, we go to our fancy workout classes. Yes, we go to our Pilates and our Soul Cycles, and we sit in a crowded room for 45 minutes and sweat. And then we, you know, and I'm proud of us for doing that. But a walk is literally, I not to get too woo-woo, but it's like what humans were supposed to do, mm-hmm. right? We're just supposed to walk around, get fresh air, go get yourself a coffee. I swear to God, a 5 minute walk at the beginning of your day totally sets the trajectory off on a good path. So I do that, but mine is usually longer. It's like why I live in LA, so that I can go for long walks every single morning of the year. I walk for like an hour and then I come back. I always have breakfast. I literally am so jealous of those people who are like, I don't eat till lunch.
Or people who are like, I just forgot to eat.
I forgot to eat. I'm like, good for you. I like have to eat in the morning. Otherwise I'm famished. I'll make a smoothie or I'll go get breakfast. And then my assistant will come over. We'll go over what we have to do in the day. And then after that, things go more like kind of crazy, especially lately. I just feel like since things have started to open back up again, the events have been off the charts. Like,
before the pandemic, you weren't doing this, right? Like, weren't in this industry. Like, so this must be like a massive, like a good slap in the face. Like, you've woken up,
nuts.
Cinderella vibes.
It's especially in LA where, you know, love it or hate it, the clout you have online actually matters in real life, which is, you know, conversation for another podcast. But I went into lockdown like with no followers, no job, like planning to move home to my parents. And then I exited and I'm like getting glam every day, going to all these red carpets. So it's definitely an interesting juxtaposition. What I'll say is I feel really lucky that this is all happening to me at my age, which is 31. And I feel so protective over my little friends on TikTok who are like 21 and they just moved to LA. And I'm like, you guys, like, you've never been to an office. You've never sent an email. You don't know how to deal with trolling. And listen, I'm not an expert on how to deal with trolling, but at least I feel like I'm fully formed human before this has all happened to me. So again, it's one of the positives of being the oldest TikToker.
How do you make money?
I do brand deals. So it's so fascinating to people because I don't do affiliate marketing, which no shade to affiliate marketing. And basically the difference is for me, right at the beginning, I was like, I know I'll feel weird if I get a kickback from something. If I feel that I'm pushing someone to buy something that I'm going to get direct money from, I prefer to partner with brands on a larger scale.
So for those who don't understand, basically when you link to a product, you're not getting any commission on that. There's you're linking it because you love it.
Yeah, I'm linking it because I love it. And it started because I did this TikTok about this water bottle, this cup.
I know, the sippy cup.
And the sippy cup. And like some New York Times reporter was like, this TikTok has 4 million views and 500,000 likes and this TikToker didn't get commission. And I was like, I'm obsessed with recommending products. And I know what I like. I'm a really decisive person, which in a way is why I'm a good influencer, because I'm like, I really love something. Like if I love something, I will not shut up about it. So how I make money is a brand will come to me and say, okay, why don't you do 3 TikToks, like a bunch of Instagram stories, a grid post, and we'll partner together for 6 months. And to me, that suits my personality, my audience, my followers better anyway, because you have time to like work together creatively. It's not just a one and done. Like, again, it's part of that era that I think is coming to a close of like the grab for cash. Like, oh yeah, we'll do 10K for this, you know, Instagram post or whatever. Like, it's all about like bigger partnerships. But to me, I know it's a good brand deal when I announce it and my followers are like, oh my God, you love that. That's great for you. Like when I did Skims, everyone was like, this is perfect for you. Mm-hmm. You love Kim Kardashian. You love Skims. You've talked about it naturally. And now you're making content for them. So it's
Chipotle,
like
Chipotle, another one.
Chipotle, like such a good partnership.
For those who don't know, you have a bowl named after you.
I have a bowl named after me because I was so obsessed with it. And I was making organic content for them just like because I loved it. And
can we get it here?
I know it was only in America. Yeah. But it was the best. And they were such a great team to partner with because they like had me in HQ. They had me in the back, like meeting the chef. Like that's interesting content. Like audiences are very smart now. They're not just going to accept an influencer being like, you should buy this mug because like I say so. Like those days are over or they're coming to a close. That has been my business strategy and it worked really well. Luckily, I have a manager and a team who is totally down to do that with me. I was like, I never want to sell anything cringy. Like I not only will I not? But like, I can, because my whole thing with my followers is being honest, and they can tell when I'm being sincere or not.
Authenticity is your brand now,
it's
right?
It's my brand.
How, at what point were you like, oh shit, this is a career, like this is a viable career option now?
Well, I started getting calls. I remember it was in August. So I started in April, and I started getting calls from like agents and managers being like, do you have representation? And I was like, what?
Sorry, we're also literally talking like 15 months ago, like no time at all, right?
It was so crazy. I was so shocked. And then I remember my first big brand deal was Amazon Prime, or Amazon Prime Video reached out, and they were like, can you make 6 TikToks for us? And I was like, yeah, I'll do it for free. And then this guy who was helping me out, he's one of my mentors, and he was an agent. He was like, no, like they're going to pay you. Like this is real. And then after I did that, I was like, oh, I can do this. Mm-hmm. And then I basically became full-time content January of this year, because before that I was still doing odd jobs. Like I had to pay my rent. I was still stuck in LA. I couldn't get back to England. I was like, oh my God. And then, so that's when I really started to monetize, is when I like got a manager and that stuff.
When have you had, or what have been your real kind of pinch me moments? Like, what's been the coolest things you've done?
Oh my God. I mean, there's just, it's insane. Like, I mean, Gwyneth Paltrow collab was obviously like something that I dreamed of.
I mean, for those who haven't seen, can you explain a bit about Rich Mom as well?
So when I had no following, I used to take a picture of my outfit when I worked in like corporate America.
And you've always done this. I've always
done these like stupid, like from the days of Snapchat. Yeah. I would take a picture of my outfit, and it would be like literally a pantsuit because I like worked in corporate America, and I would make up a character. And a lot of the times they would be like Rich Moms, just because I think Rich Moms are like hysterical and funny and multifaceted and great fodder for comedy. And so I was like, I wonder if this could be adapted for TikTok. Like, it's so random. It's such a, talk about niche like parts of your brain. And I made it, and it like people were obsessed immediately. And so I basically do different Rich Mom characters for different cities, and basically say this is what they would wear, this is what they would drive, like gently making fun of them. It's like half satire, half aspirational. I had noticed that Gwyneth Paltrow started following me, and then I was chatting to Goop. I'm a big Goop fan. I think that they do great work. And they were launching a new show, and they were like, oh, you should come and, you know, do some content for us, maybe interview her. And I was like, would she ever do a Rich Mom? And they were like, she's totally into it. And so I went to Goop HQ, and we filmed together, and she couldn't be cooler. I mean,
what a babe. That was
so
cool.
Like, I've worshipped her for so long. I think she's so in on the joke, and she's so smart, and so runs smart. Such a good business. And it was just like, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, you can't not rate her for that, can you?
Yeah, yeah. So she's great. But I mean, certain events, like, I'm not going to lie, the parties are amazing. Like, I got to wear a Dior dress to Amphar, and it was like the best day of my life.
Cool.
Like,
yeah.
So I'm just so grateful. I mean, I think those are like the external pinch me moments. The internal pinch me moments, it's just, they all come daily from the interactions with my followers. Just when I get notes about the impact that I've made on people's lives, like that is, I'm just so grateful and happy day to day now. Not to say that I was miserable in my 20s, but I think, again, to anyone listening who maybe hasn't found their passion and their, you know, especially for millennials, like we were all raised in that era of like, oh, this 18-year-old founded this company and now they're a billionaire. And if you don't have your own company by the time you're 22, you're a failure. And it's like, you know, it can come at any time in your life. So I think just day to day, I feel pinch me that I get to do something that doesn't feel like work now.
You're having such a moment, again, sounds really reductive, but, you know, it's like you really kind of hit that cultural zeitgeist on the head. You know, everybody's writing about you, talking about you. There's so much attention. How does that feel? Like, it's, you know, it's such a quick rise. So, like, how do you deal with that day to day?
I'm going to go there. Okay, so I think for women, I think it can be difficult, because the second you show any, like, you're not being like, I'm so grateful, which I am. I am so freaking grateful, but it's a lot. Some days I'm just like, wow, geez, like, It's so much, and it's not a bad moment. It's just like, it's very intense. I'll put it that way. And again, it's so interesting that the pandemic was kind of like in the middle of it, so that I don't even remember what my life was like before. So it's fun. It can be overwhelming. It's high highs and low lows. I mean, I have phone addiction. Like my screen time is 11, 12 hours a day. Which is horrific.
Well, it's how you make a living.
It's my job, for sure. But I am like, there will come a time when I need to set better boundaries. But I do believe that, like, as you said, we're in a moment right now. So you have to like strike while the iron's hot, mm-hmm. make hay while the sun shines. Like there will be a time for me to rest and recuperate, but now's not it. And so it's just, it's full on. Mm-hmm. And I'm holding on as tight as I can.
Do you feel the weight of the responsibility of all these questions and all these young followers?
Oh my God. I take it so seriously. Like, I don't take anything seriously. I don't even take myself seriously. Mm. But this is the only thing in my life where I'm like, these girls trust me. I try to do an hour or two every day just answering DMs. Because I get it. Because if someone has the courage and if someone trusts me enough to take time to write me a problem that they're having in their life, that is so important to me. And that's basically my priority above anything else in my business. You know, and again, like, I don't have all the answers, but I think sometimes it just takes someone who you look up to or whatever to tell you that it's going to be okay. Like sometimes that can be more meaningful than like having the answer. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But that's a lot of pressure on you, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It can be a lot. I mean, I get the questions that I get are, some of them are easy. Some of them are difficult.
I bet. Can you tell me a bit about your dating advice? And we were doing a bit of a circle, but you know, and the box theory, which is like another thing that's like gone a bit viral, right? So like, what is the box theory and what is your dating advice?
I've lived in 3 different cities in my 20s. I've dated guys in all of those cities. I have friends who are married with kids. I have single friends. I have, you know, friends, girlfriends all over. And throughout my 20s, I've been kind of quietly collecting data. And I've always like had theories. I love a theory. I love a way to talk about it. Box theory is, have been working on this theory for a while. And then I noticed that so many girls were asking me questions about like, when should I sleep with a guy? Or like, oh my God, like what, I did this and that. Like, do you think he's going to text me? Or did I screw it up? Box theory is the idea that if you meet a guy in a romantic setting, so a setup, a dating app, or at a party, you know, you're sitting next to him at a dinner party, what have you, immediately when he meets you, he's going to put you in a box. He wants to date you. He wants to sleep with you, or he wants nothing to do with you. Okay, if it's box 3, you're out of luck. Sorry, move on. Next. But that's fine because it's so clear. Okay, the way that people get trapped or tripped up is like between the dating and the sleeping with, because girls often think that they can manipulate a guy into dating you. Like, oh, if I don't sleep with him, or if I play hard to get, or if I play games, or if I post this on my Instagram story, maybe he'll want to date me instead of just hook up with me. He's already made his decision. Mm-hmm. Like, you can, if he doesn't want to date you and you hold out, you don't sleep with him, you talk about how much you love your family and your dog, like, that's not going to make him want to date you, okay?
He's just not that into you.
He's just not that into you, exactly. Vice versa, if he wants to date you, you could literally rebuff him and puke on his shoes and, like, get really drunk and, like, act like a maniac, and he's still going to be, like, head over heels, goo goo gaga in love with you. And then people are like, okay, well, tanks, that puts all the power in the guy's hand. And then I say, you're looking at it the wrong way. The point is, you should be empowered to act how you want. If you feel like sleeping with a guy on a second date because you feel like it and you're ready, go for it. It doesn't matter. Mm. So much of the time I get questions that end in, do you think he likes me? And then I put it back to them and I'm like, do you like him? Why do we have this problem? Because there is a scarcity mindset amongst women, okay?
This is a girl thing, right? It's a social media thing, but it's a girl thing.
No, it's a girl thing. There's a scarcity mindset. Ultimately, deep down, we all have this fear. There's not enough men, there's not enough marriages, there's not enough houses, there's not enough jobs that are cool, and we have this scarcity mindset in a way that men don't. And it's so frustrating because it's like, it's fear that's holding us back. It's fear that's informing so much of our dating life, which sucks, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's like, a lot of the time, and so then reverse box theory is my theory where I'm like, again, generalization, if you're the exception, congratulations, I'm so happy for you. A lot of girls, especially in their young 20s, will automatically put a guy in the I want to date him box because they want a boyfriend so bad. So it's reverse box theory. So for women, there's just one. Like, girls will see a dude on a dating app who's like very pedestrian, very mediocre, like some random guy wearing a short sleeve button down, like, you know, whatever, probably doesn't have a headboard. And before they've even met him, they've whipped themselves into a frenzy thinking, this is my husband. Mm-hmm. We're going to have a June wedding in the Cotswolds. I think I'll wear Vera Wang. You know, and they've future tripped an entire life with a guy that they don't even know what he's like. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then by the time they get to the date, they're so freaked out. They're so desperate. They feel like it's a job interview where they have to win this guy over because they've projected this image of him. And I'm like, whoa, don't put a guy in the dating box before he's worthy. Mm. You have to just wait. Like, how do you feel on the date? Does he ask you questions? Does he text you the next day? Does he make you feel funny? Does he make you feel sexy and cool? Like, only then does he get to go in the date box. Mm. And I really, really attribute that to scarcity mindset. Yeah. And it's like, there's, I promise you, there's enough to go around. There is so much to go around it. And I think that scarcity mindset is something that massively holds women back, not only in dating, but in careers as well.
Because we've talked about that, you know, there's this mentality that like, if, you know, somebody else being pretty doesn't make you less pretty. Yes. But like, how do we get out of that? Like, how do you think as women, you know, there's a lot of us, but how do we work to break that down? Is it being more like you and being more sisterly and supportive?
Well, for me, like on a practical level, like different mantras, like that you can use to kind of like control alt delete in your brain. Like say you're at work and your friend comes in and she's like, oh my God, I got engaged. Like, look at my ring. It's huge. Like, oh my God, we got engaged in Thailand. Like, everything's amazing. And you're thinking like, oh my God, like, I'm never going to get married. Okay. The first thing that I always say to my followers is, number one, comparison is the thief of joy. Like, don't even go farther down that road in your head. Just if you find yourself comparing, go control alt delete. Comparison is the thief of joy. Like, there is nothing good going to come of me comparing this to my friend. Secondly, her success is not my failure. One of my favorite mantras. Okay. Literally, someone getting engaged, someone getting a promotion, someone going on holiday with a really hot boyfriend, like, doesn't mean that you're not going to have that. And it doesn't mean that that's not coming for you or something even better is coming for you. It's not like her or you. And you have to really internalize that. And it's difficult because women can be competitive. And I'm okay to say that. Like, I think, you know, we can't just say like, oh, let's all hold hands and get along. Like, you need to anchor yourself in those truths because women can be competitive in it, and you can automatically feel that way. And then thirdly, the thing I'd say is feel your friends' wins like as if they were your own. Like, if your friend comes in and gets engaged, like, genuinely feel so much love in your heart, feel like it's almost you. Because what's that phrase? It's like, a win for her is a feather in all of our caps. Like, it just, you know, it means like, that's good. You need to feel joy for your friends in your bones, because otherwise you'll be comparative, otherwise it will take you to a dark place, and otherwise your 20s can be a little bit of a treacherous time, because it's like, up until the age of when you graduate school, you're all in the same kind of playing field, roughly, right? You're all like, you know, the same age, everybody's kind of doing the same thing, you're all in school, and then all of a sudden in your 20s, everybody shoots off and catapults to different paths. Someone's getting married, someone's getting a job. Yeah, those are my three advice things.
Yeah, it's so, there's a lot to unpack. Have you faced much negativity online?
Yeah, there's really bad trolling, and I think that the internet is a really, well, first of all, I'm an optimist. Like, I believe in the good in people, but there's also a lot of bad people, and it does frighten me that there is, it seems like it's almost a sport now to be trolls online. So yeah, I get the odd troll comment. I get the odd, really creepy DM from a Finsta that's just like set out to ruin my day. And you know what? You can do all the tricks. You can say, oh, well, imagine how bad their life must be, or imagine how sad you must be to make a Finsta. Sometimes I'm like, you spent 25 minutes setting this up so that you could tell me I look ugly. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, you need to get a hobby. But sometimes it just hurts my feelings.
Like, of course it does.
Yeah. Like, sometimes it just sucks. Sometimes I'll be like already having a rough day, or I'll be really tired and I'll look at my DMs and it will be like, you are so fat and ugly. And I'm like, thank you. Okay, great. This is fun for me. You know, one thing that I noticed recently is like on Instagram, if you block someone, it will say block blah, blah, blah.
And their other accounts.
Yeah. Which to me indicates that trolling and bullying have become such a problem online. Mm. They literally had to change the app to, which is like, oh my God, people, we have to do better. Like, this is really crazy. So, I mean, I have a couple of different tactics. Like, sometimes I'll just respond. And a couple of times I've responded and they'll be like, oh my God, I never thought you'd see this. And it's like, well, then why did you? That's even worse to me, because then it's like you just were spreading like acid into the internet with like, just why?
It's offloading hate, isn't it?
It's offloading hate. And it's just like, I wish that I could tell every person, like, if you are just doing it because you think it feels like cathartic in the moment, you're making it so much worse. You're making negativity a habit for yourself. And at the end of the day, yeah, you might hurt my feelings sometimes, but I can put off my phone and I'm a happy and I'm a positive person. Like, if you sit there on the online all day, like being spreading mean comments, like, that's really, you're taking your life down a bad path. So it's tough. Again, I'm 31. Like, I've had many jobs. I have great friend group. Like, I'm pretty supported, but sometimes I do look on the kids on TikTok and I'm like, man, you're 18. You're like literally stunning girl. And you have a million likes on this, 500,000 comments. And it's just like, it's a bit much. Yeah.
It'll be really interesting long term to see the effects that it has on influences because it can get dark.
No, I always joke that I think social media is kind of going to be cigarettes. Like, I think my grandkids are going to be like, you want to know why grandma's crazy? Can you believe she used to do like 12 hours of raw internet a day? And they're like, yeah, that's why she's like talking to the corner over there. And
they're going to be like debating whether to make it illegal.
I really believe that.
You went through quite a public breakup on TikTok. What did that teach you? I mean, public, you kept his identity low-key, but you know, obviously like you documented the fact you were in a relationship and then that relationship broke down. Like, did that make you wary of sharing things or not so much?
It's so funny. One of my followers asked me this. She was like, I think you're not telling us as much about dating life lately. And I'm not going to share with them because I love to share with them, but I am recalibrating a bit slightly. Yeah. So basically I fell head over heels for this guy, like so in love with him. I think we said, I love you after like 3 weeks. I was so public with it on TikTok. I was like, you guys, I'm so happy. And the majority of people were so happy for me to see me in this new, like, happy time. And then, yeah, he cheated on me, and I like found out, and I thought, okay, I have a choice. Like, either I can cower and just, you know, be in the sadness by myself and just say, well, I'm not telling you guys what happened, or I can try to leverage this into a teaching moment, because I think being cheated on is something that causes a lot of shame for a lot of women. I mean, even when you think about, like, in the media, think about like how women are portrayed, like celebrities, like it's always about the woman, right? It's always like, oh, like what did she do to make him cheat, blah, blah, blah. So in my really raw state, I just found out, I recorded this video and I was like, I'm devastated, but I'm not embarrassed. Like, I'm humiliated, but I'm not embarrassed that I fell in love so quickly. I'm not embarrassed that I trusted the person that I love. I believe vulnerability is a superpower and something that makes people strong. And I was like, yeah, like I'm broken, but I'm going to be okay. And the response was amazing. And I'm so glad that I did it. It was just such a hard time, but it sounds so fucking cheesy, but in helping my followers like see that and teaching them a lesson, like I got so many messages saying, this has just happened to me, or wow, I wish I'd looked at it from this way. It did help me. Mm. It really did help me get through it. And yeah, I mean, sometimes I look back and I'm like, I cannot believe I did that. But I did. I made a 3-minute video crying on TikTok. So
got you where you are today.
So here we are. Yeah.
You talked before, we had a laugh about the idea that social media will one day be seen as, you know, something that was so terrible for you. But like, in all seriousness, kind of, where do you see this going? We'll talk about you in a minute, but like generally, you know, obviously there was Facebook and there was Snapchat and these things still exist, but it's ever evolving. Like, A, how do you keep up?
Yeah.
And B, what are you, you know, you're better placed than anyone to predict the future of this. So what's next?
Oh, such a good question. I think, I'm still trying to get through Mark Zuckerberg's thing about the metaverse and how we're all going to have avatars. Like I didn't quite get through that, but I think that is sort of, we're definitely headed that way. I mean, the pandemic definitely taught us that we can do most of our work remotely, and that's only going to intensify our relationship with social media and the time that we spend online. Again, I'm a really, really glass half full person. I do think that social media is a tool for good, but like I've spoken about, like there's also a lot, there's a really gnarly underbelly that is scary and that I'm afraid of. So I think it will be kind of up to not only the curators and the tastemakers and the entertainers, like on the lower level, but also like the lawmakers in terms of like where this goes. I mean, they were making in the US, I don't know about here, they were actually had a hearing about making Finstas illegal. And like it was in the Supreme Court because they said like we need to verify people's identities. Like people just can't be having like 10 accounts.
But they keep saying they can't police it, right?
But they're saying that, but it's like, is that true? Like, I don't know.
Are you sure?
I mean, are we going to get to a point where it will be like, you have to be, everyone has to be verified, like their identity to have a profile online. Like, would that be better? I don't know. So I think it's really up to us in terms of how we harness the power.
We obviously grew up with, you know, magazines and publishing in that conventional way. Have you been surprised? I mean, like at Sheerlux, we're surprised at how different age groups consume different things. So have you been surprised at, you know, the way that media and content is created through TikTok and how younger girls consume content and media now?
It's insane, because I remember when we were growing up, like, I know you're the same way. I would get a magazine every month and I would like read it cover to cover, like,
word for word,
and like tear out pictures and like save them and whatever, and that's how we would know what was going on. Now, like, girls get their fashion inspiration from TikTok. They'll watch fashion influencers get dressed every day. Fashion influencers will say, should I pick this outfit or that outfit? And then in 20 minutes, there will be 20,000 comments to help them pick their outfit. Like, it's a new level of interactivity. It's insane. And obviously, they are on Instagram as well. Yeah, it's
nuts. Do you think they are? Do you think that you know, young 20-somethings are using Instagram anywhere near as much as they're using TikTok?
I think that they use it like we used to use Facebook before people stopped using Facebook. Like, I think that they just use it to, like, almost as like an organizational tool to put up their pictures,
like they
whatever.
Have a presence, yeah.
But they don't, yeah, they're on Snapchat. Mm. Well, at least in the States, they all use Snapchat to talk to each other, TikTok to socialize and to create content, and then Instagram's more just like kind of aesthetic almost at this point. Yeah.
It's like a mood board.
Yeah. And I don't think that they read magazines.
No, they don't. I can tell you for a fact. We've done the research. They don't.
Which is nuts.
I know. It's crazy.
It's so crazy. And like, I'll always love a magazine. I can't help it. There's nothing like it. The weight of a glossy feeling book in your hand. It's like, to me, the coolest thing always. Yeah.
How have you been received as a, you know, content creator by the industry, like by the magazine industry? Because obviously there's often been a lot of friction between like traditional publish, you know, you're effectively a publisher, aren't you? Yeah. So like between that traditional form of media and influencers, like how's that relationship?
They have been so welcoming to me. I feel like especially at Fashion Week in New York in September, I noticed, wow, the front row is all TikTokers. It was crazy. It was so insane. But you know why? Because I looked around and I was like, wow, it's so nice that they're receiving us and like inviting us and welcoming us and whatever. And I look around and I'm like, every TikToker here has a ring light and is making a TikTok live from backstage. They're making a TikTok front row. They're doing a fun transition video with their outfit. That's the content that
publishing.
Yeah, they're publishing. So it's like the fashion houses need TikTokers and content creators, and now more and more magazines do. And I've been lucky to work with some amazing magazines on some amazing content, and it's cool. So I think it's amazing. I've definitely been warmly received, but I'm super cognizant that that hasn't always been the case. And I think now it's kind of, it's feeling truly integrated and like a happy partnership. But I remember that article that Vogue wrote a couple years ago.
It was like
they lashed out about influencers versus editors.
Exactly.
Yeah. The TikTok team is amazing, like to their creators. Mm-hmm. Like they're very supportive. Not to name names, but not so much like Instagram. Email me back.
Help me. What's next for you? Where do you go from here?
I am so excited to continue to talk to my followers on it, just in this intense way. Like, I always joke that I want to grow up with them. Like, I want to get married with them. Like, I want to have kids with them. Like, I feel like we're friends and now we're just starting this journey together. So my focus for the next year is just going to be continuing to talk to them and foster the special relationships. And I'm going to do the annoying influencer thing saying that I do have some cool stuff coming up and I can't wait to share it with everybody. But yeah, for now, I'm getting through Christmas party season.
Just trying to hang on in there.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This was so fun.
You can follow Christina Tinks at
Tinks on TikTok, at It's Me Tinks on Instagram.
Thank you so much for joining me, and thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed that. If you have any questions, please do email podcast@sheerlux.com. We love hearing from you. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, and tell your friends, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.